Okay, we're going to go ahead and call this meeting to order at 6:33 p.m. Is there anybody who would like to address the board regarding any closed session items? Okay, seeing none, we will go ahead and move into closed session. Okay, we are back in open session. We are going to call this meeting to order at 7:01 p.m. And Ms. Poulos is going to lead us in the invocation, and Ms. Shoemaker on the flex loop.
Dear Lord, be with us this evening as we make the decisions that affect the students' lives, and be with all of us through this holiday season. Keep us safe and bring all of us back at the beginning of this new year. Thank you for all you've given us and the blessings we have to be part of the school district. In his name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please. Here.
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 Okay. The following action was taken in closed session on December the 11th, 2012. It was moved by Ms. Poulos and seconded by Mr. Cox and approved to expel the following pupil from the schools of the district. Pupil 184776, Education Code 48900J, unlawfully possessed or unlawfully offered, arranged, or negotiated to sell drug paraphernalia. The pupil is expelled and will not be eligible to apply for readmission until the date set in the rehabilitation plan. And the vote was 5-0. Okay. For my report, we went to CSBA in between, and it was a really good conference. It was great to see everybody, and the sessions were excellent, and we have to set a date. So I'll be setting a date with the superintendent to go over some of the material that I got from my sessions and what is applicable to the district or not. So that's all I have to report. Mr. Cox, Ms. Shoemaker, Ms. Poulos.
I just wanted to say how grateful I was for the opportunity to go to CSBA and that to see what could happen with textbooks, and that when they're actually online, they could be updated. But we're always talking about differentiating instruction, and at the push of a button, you can have it an easy read. If you wanted some more intense work, that would be at another push of the button. All of that was really exciting. They also talked about iPads, and we've learned some wonderful things about them for special ed and bilingual, but they were going on how that's just the start, and they were going through all of the things, how it could be beneficial for all of our students. It would be great to find a way to do that. I know we're doing budget cuts, but it is the wave of the future, and to figure out how we could give our children those opportunities, and at the same time being able to differentiate instruction is something which is one of our priorities.
Mr. Coakley and I are looking for options that we may be bringing to you.
Great.
Oh, excellent. Mr. Spence? No? Okay. Okay. I have no blue cards. Oh, I'm sorry, the student report. I apologize. Ms. Abad, the student report.
Okay, for a Coronado report, 20 students attended National Hispanic Career Conference last week. The staff has been through 2 days of lesson study and is ready to proceed to the next step. Our basketball team won their first game and is playing again tomorrow. Our soccer team won their first game, and there are 4 girls on the team. Our staff continues to have discussion with our students regarding credits and graduation. There are 21 students scheduled to return to West Covina High School for second semester, and we are looking forward to winter break. West Covina High School report. West Covina High School hosted their annual college and career fair last Friday in the gymnasium, and it was met with great success. We had over 80 community members representing their companies and colleges. Last Friday, our staff development for teachers consisted of teacher-led professional developments for literacy strategies and how to begin implementation of the Common Core for each subject area. We also hosted two thinking map training for our instructional aides, and they are requesting for additional training. This week, we will be hosting a thinking maps training for our new teachers. We are celebrating our winter sports by holding a rally this Friday to kick off the winter season. Our counseling department worked with the graphic arts department to put together a video for the freshmen to watch. The video included an introduction to the entire counseling department and to review over the important information such as grades, transcripts, tutoring opportunities, and how to balance studying versus homework time. Counseling department is also hosting a parent night for PSAT scores tonight and another for ASVAB tomorrow. Our social science department is hosting a history day in the cafeteria tomorrow, and all are invited to attend. And for Edgewood High School, for sports, both boys and girls JV and varsity soccer are in season. Boys and girls basketball have begun. Boys varsity basketball will be having their first home game this Friday at 6 against Rosemead. Varsity and JV swim will begin practicing after the holiday. Varsity and JV girls softball have begun practicing for their season. Boys baseball is practicing and looking forward to a great season. Cross country and swim just held their end of season banquet. Former Edgewood High School children varsity cross country star Patrick Jacobo was a special guest at the banquet. The first new Edgewood High School varsity letters were presented to 15 varsity cross country members. Events. Last week, Johnston's came in to talk to all the juniors about purchasing their class rings. Orders were taken today. Many juniors are excited to design the first batch of new Edgewood High School class rings. To kick off the holiday season, ASB will be hosting a Spirit Week from December 17 to 21. This week will consist of Candy Cane Day, Misfit Toy Day, Christmas Icon Day, the Dress Up as a Present Day, and Ugly Christmas Sweater Day. Lunchtime activities will be held throughout this last week. Clubs. Interact Club is holding a various events through January 15 to raise money for their Hyper International. The goal is to raise $5,000 to fight world hunger and send support to 15 countries throughout the world. Interact has built an arc on the window of the ASB room. For a $5 donation, students and teachers can become arc angels and have their names placed in stars on the arc. Interact Club held an annual open mic night for Hyper International on December 1st. It was an entertaining night with a variety of acts. Interact raised over $800. Drama Club performed The Importance of Being Earnest by Oscar Wilde last weekend to delighted audiences. Mock Trial will be hosting a free demonstration Thursday, December 13 at 7 p.m. for family and friends in room M2. Everyone is welcome. Edgewood Middle School and West Covina High School graduate Ian Jones will return in the capacity of celebrity judge for the event. National Honor Society elected officers last week. Choir and Show Choir will hold their winter concert on Wednesday, December 19. All are welcome. Edgewood High School Band will hold their winter concert on Thursday, December 20 at 7. All are welcome. Alumni. The Alumni Association will be having a homecoming event coinciding with our first varsity home game this Friday, December 14. During halftime, alumni who were former sports athletes will be recognized. Everyone is welcome to come and watch Edgewood High School Lions' first varsity home game and welcome home our Trojan alumni.
Ms. Abad is working on a senior project, so she's going to go ahead and leave us now. We wish you a very happy holidays.
Thank you. You too.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Abad. We'll see you in the new year.
You too. Bye.
Okay. I have no blue cards in front of me. Is there anyone who would like to address the board? Okay, seeing no one, we will move on to the business session. Anybody who would like to take anything off of consent? Anybody who'd like to add anything to consent?
I'm on add 7, 12, and 13.
7. Well, 13. Anybody else? No, we have to. Yeah, we need to hear.
He's excited.
He's just, you know, he's
can't
he's
wait.
So little. So
he's been practicing. You can't
he
take that
to see
away.
Yeah, we're looking forward. But thank you, Jessica. There you go. You're right. Okay, so we will go ahead and add item 7. Item
12, 13.
12 and 13. I can't change my pages. Consent.
I'll go ahead and move
thank
the consent
you.
Calendar with those additions.
I'll second it.
Okay. Okay, so it has been moved by Mr. Spence and seconded by Ms. Poulos to approve the agenda as amended. Items 7, 12, and 13 have been added to consent for the regular organizational meeting of December the 11th, 2012. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, let's move on to item number 6. Anybody have any nominations for CSBA? Okay. Seeing none. We just table this. Okay. We'll table that. New nominations. On to item number 8. Okay. AR3550 Food Service Child Nutrition Program. Mr. Cox. Miss. Shoemaker.
No.
Mr. Spence.
Actually, I just have two things. One is on page 8B.
8B, like boy?
Yes. What is offer versus serve?
I'm sorry, what was the question? What is?
It says it must comply with the current, quote, offer versus serve, quote, regulations when selecting menu items. What's offer versus serve?
The last sentence, program. Oh, on page 8B. It's a new program. You don't mandate it. You'll have to offer it versus giving it to them. They have a choice. They have choices. It's part of the meal plan, the five choices, the meat, the grain, the fruit,
right.
The vegetable, the milk.
And so they can turn down any part of that?
Because
previously they had the may-decline maximum of 2 menu items.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, actually, when I went to observe the school breakfast, they actually had an aide in the back that was like trying to prevent loss of milk and things like that because they were forcing kids to take things that they weren't going to eat. And so, I mean, my question is what's offer versus serve then?
They have to take 3 of the items. They have to take them. I can come back with some more clarification from
okay,
child
so
nutrition
they have to take
director.
3 of the items whether they're going to eat them or not?
Correct.
And is that because that way we get reimbursed? Does that have anything to do with Title I and being – I mean, not Title I.
Well, it's part of the regulations to get
lunch.
Right. It is part of the regulations, but
so kids have
I know
to take
what you're
3 whether or not they're going to eat 3.
Right. For the
that's correct.
Okay. Now, would that be all kids or just those on free and reduced
just
lunch? But those paying can take 1 item.
I can get
right?
clarification on that, but I believe it's all, but I'll get clarification.
Okay.
So we would actually mandate kids that are paying that they'd have to take 3?
I'll get some clarification on that.
Okay, because it seems odd to me sometimes and wasteful.
I thought that they didn't differentiate. There was like a ticket system, or so when they're walking through the lunch
you
line,
can't
the people
tell
that are serving
oh,
the food
know.
Would know the difference.
So therefore, they'd
okay.
have to take 3.
So
of them.
Since they weren't identified in any way, then everybody would have to do it. I'm wondering.
It's a good question, and I can get clarification.
Because it just seems wasteful, you know, to begin with, to force kids to take things they're going to throw away, but then on top of it, to force kids that aren't part of the program to take three, you know,
right.
If they're not going to eat it, it just seems even more
like
wasteful.
For example, my children bring lunch, but if I wanted them to purchase milk, they would have
to
get...
Well, they could do that. That's on a cart.
Yeah. Okay.
That's on a cart, but if they're buying the lunch...
Right. My understanding is they have to take the three, but I'll get clarification and bring that back.
Because it just seems, I don't want to tell you what my mom would tell me about starving kids in different places of the world, but it just seems very wasteful that we'd be doing that if we didn't have to. And then the second thing is just a pet peeve in C, you know, soy, rice, and those kind of things aren't milk. They're actually juice because that's what they are. They're not milk, even though they're called milk for marketing purposes. It's actually soy juice. It's... because it's not a mammal. But anyways, I'll let it go. It's juice. It's soy juice. And rice juice. It's not milk.
But on the cartons my children buy, it does say rice milk.
I know. It's all propaganda, so.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry, Mr. Spence, was that all?
That's it. I just want to know about the difference is then between offer versus serve and the stuff on the slide.
Okay,
let's move on to AR4133. Mr. Cox?
After having spent the better part of last weekend in San Francisco, I would have to say, right, this is the travel reimbursement, that the meal allowances are grossly... under allowed, but other than that, this is fine. Yeah, that's right.
Ms. Shoemaker, even in San Diego.
This isn't my idea. I heard it from a fellow board member. If there was a way for flexibility...
You're taking my...
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Because I thought you skipped yourself.
No, it's going to come back to me at the end.
I'll let you do it. You'll do a better job of explaining it because it was her idea, and I thought it was worth mentioning.
Thank you. Mr. Spence? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Pulosh. That was a great segue into my moment. Looking at page 8E. This is my suggestion. I'm taking on in the spirit of what Mr. Cox was saying over there. I'd like the board to consider allowing a $50 per diem per day, but allowing us the flexibility of determining how we spend that. We may want to spend all of it at lunch. We may want to spend all of it at dinner. Here's my suggestion. 1, 2, 3, fourth line down under meals. It makes sense to keep a certain limitation for flight days. That's fair to give a dollar amount. So maybe the sentence can say limitation shall apply on flight days, $10 for breakfast, $12 for lunch, $25 for dinner per day, and then the description of flight days. And then another paragraph that says on non-flight days, meal times and amounts are flexible to a maximum per diem of $50. So that's my suggestion. Go ahead, Mr.
I do have one comment about that, and that would be I do think if you're going to do something like that, you have to have language in there that deals with, you know, people, if they're having a breakfast and a lunch at CSBA, they shouldn't get $50.
Okay.
That's fair.
They shouldn't
be
having $50 per diem if they're getting a lunch and a breakfast that's being, you know,
paid
part of the sponsored stuff, and so you have to figure out how that would work.
Okay, so then would we...
Because, I mean, you have language in there later about that, but you'd have to figure out whatever language would be to make that appropriate, because I think that would be, that would be a problem.
Right, for example, where I attended
a
lunch.
I mean, you can attend a breakfast and a lunch easily at those events and then, you know, submit $50 worth, you know, and I think that...
For dinner.
I have a problem with that for a particular...
Okay. Now, what if lunch was covered, but you were to attack on the breakfast to dinner? Are you open to that?
No, but I'm just saying that you have
lunch
to find a way to deduct. You have to find a way to deduct those.
Okay.
And would it be that specified amount?
Well, I don't know. That's the issue I would have is that you could end up with sponsored meals at the breakfasts and lunches, especially at least at CSBA, and then, you know, claim a $50 per diem, and that to me would be inappropriate.
Okay. I would agree with you. I would be okay with
so you have to figure out
saying lunch was worth 15, so now you're left with 35.
So you have to figure out whatever language is going to be appropriate and
that's
then bring it back.
And then
I don't want to try to come up with language now, but I think language.
Okay, so then do we want Dr. Coughlin to work on that language? Okay. I don't have that language ready to go, but that sounds very fair. The other thing is that the 10, 12 for lunch, and 25 doesn't add up to 50, so I was going to suggest 15 for lunch. It's really, really difficult when we travel to get anything for less than 20. But
really, there's a Jack in the Box right by the Moscone Center.
Was there? Oh, and the Chipotle across the street.
There's a Denny's right there, too.
Just don't get a drink.
There's a Denny's there, too.
Then you have to pay tips.
All you can ask if you sit.
So I was going to suggest 10 for breakfast, 15 for lunch, 25 for dinner, and then that makes it clean when you do a $50 per diem.
If I can get a clarification. So I understand the amounts, and I think one of the board members mentioned that it's good to have those differentiated amounts because a lot of times the dinner's provided or the lunch is provided. So then if that's paid for, then you would back that out. For example, if it was $50 a day and lunch was already paid for at the conference, then you would receive $35 for the day.
I think that's fair.
Now, the question is on receipts. IRS regulations do allow for $25 or less that you do not need to show a receipt. There are some districts, and I believe even the county, do not require it, – it's just a flat per diem, and they do not require receipts to be turned in. This is written that way. Many times where I see it where there's a flat per diem, I've seen it where then the receipts are not, you don't turn the receipts in. That has pluses and minuses to it.
I know I can say from my experience, I have not gotten paid for any meals unless I've turned in a receipt.
Because that's the way the current policy is. So I didn't know if that was something that the Board of Education wants to look at. When you go to a flat per diem, sometimes it goes that way where it's this is your per diem, this is what you get. So I believe you.
We can change the language to a maximum of $50 per day, and then we eliminate.
Then it's this is what you get, and because you said could you apply some of it towards the dinner, and then if you weren't doing receipts, otherwise your receipt's going to be locked in at that. Are you saying you want it still locked in at that $25 amount, or it really wouldn't matter?
For me, I'm looking at a maximum that we could spend per day to eat is $50. And correct, mm-hmm. If I know I had an instance where I went to a luncheon, so
back
I would not expect to get covered for that. But mm-hmm. if I wanted to apply breakfast to dinner, because mm-hmm. it gets really expensive, and even with that, we're still covering the difference, tips and mm-hmm. desserts and whatever.
Why don't you write suggested language that we can bring back?
You know, but we do have exclusions that you're not allowed to spend it on your spouse and you're not allowed to
right.
spend it on alcohol.
Right. No
and if
alcohol.
If you didn't turn in receipts, I mean,
yeah, you have
be
to
no
turn
way
in a receipt.
Right? I mean, am I wrong?
Right.
Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you don't have, I mean.
It's an option available. It's an option available because of the $25 amount.
People could spend money on their spouses or right. significant others, and they could, or whoever, family members, and they could also spend money on alcohol, and there would be no accountability for that.
Yeah, no, I prefer
yes.
having the receipt.
If you specified that dinner was $30, then $25 you would not need the receipt on, but because of the IRS rules, it's $25.
But there's a difference. We don't have to follow this IRS rules for receipts.
It's so what I'm hearing from the board is to keep the receipts. The
yes.
receipts need to be turned
yes,
in.
Yes, I think okay. we're all fine with that.
But have,
have
but still have some more flexibility.
Right.
And we keep talking about this as a board, but if we're having this problem, we know staff has to be having this problem. And that if they're going to conferences or going someplace for the day, and I know that I brought my granola bars and my juice boxes, and that was my breakfast because, you know, I was conserving. But then I'm not going to charge the district anything for my juice box and my but then I had a lot of money out of pocket. Like, I just went to the little place inside the conference. It was $18 for a salad and a piece of bread. And I got my water from Lozano and Smith for free.
So.
Yes, yes.
So the only reason to specify, the only reason to differentiate on the breakfast, the lunch, and the dinner would be if you were backing out
right.
that meal because it's paid for.
Right.
Other than that, it's this is your per diem, and you spend it how you wish. However, you still need to provide receipts. And if your receipt for dinner is $35, this doesn't apply to that because you chose to use your breakfast.
Correct.
Okay.
And I do like the limitations with the flights. I think that's very fair.
Okay.
So, okay, that was... anyone else? No? Okay. Thank you, Dr. Coughlin. We look forward to some of your suggestions at the next meeting. BPAR4154, Health and Welfare Benefits. Mr. Cox. Ms. Shoemaker. Ms. Poulos. Mr. Spence. I have none. Okay. So who will go ahead and move
I'll
this?
Move
and Mr. Who will second it?
I'll second
okay.
it. We're expecting some information.
Okay.
Right.
We will go. It has been moved by Ms. Poulos and seconded by Mr. Spence with some changes for first reading. AR3550, AR4133, and AR4133. Dr. Coughlin will be getting some suggested language back to us. And BPAR4154. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay. Number nine, item number
yep.
nine.
Yep.
Okay.
I asked to have this agenda.
Right. Okay. Mr. Spence asked to have this agenda. You'd like to address
it? Yeah, I did ask to have this agenda. I did not, when I talked to staff, think that necessarily a resolution was necessary, but apparently they did, so they wrote one here. Just again, there's a two-part process for this clean water, clean, proposed so-called clean water, clean beach fee, and it's going to, the estimate is that it costs the district $177,000
a year.
A year if it's approved, and so the way it works is property owners can protest. If less than the majority do, which is usually the case, unfortunately, the supervisors then can have a proposed to put it on the ballot or to send out a ballot to landowners, property owners. To authorize the fee, and but this actually would be that we can at least send in the protest letters, or that will be on record, and they'll know that we oppose it, at least early on.
I have a question, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay?
Yes, please ask your questions.
Do we only get one vote, or since we have multiple properties, do we get multiple votes?
You get to vote for all your parcels of property.
But we send one thing on behalf of the district.
Well, yeah, one protest letter, but you got to list the different pieces of property.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then when the voting happens, it's the same thing.
Okay.
And they have a sliding scale on the fee as well. If you're a homeowner, they sent you a thing that explains some of that. But there's differences for homeowners and commercial properties and things like that as well. And so I would like to move that we approve the resolution and to send in a protest letter to the County Board of Supervisors by the deadline. Which is January 15th, I think, but we'll do it now.
I'll second that.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Yes.
I just want to thank Mr. Spence for doing this at this time. I did receive an email today that there's a conference call with superintendents and Dr. with the county to talk about what can we do about this. So I'm going to send them a sample of our resolution because I think districts are very worried about this. So thank you.
Okay, I didn't hear any opposition, so it passes 5-0. Okay, and thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Kaplan. Thank you. We were ahead of the game. Thank you, Mr. Spence. Okay, we are moving on to item number 14. We'll turn this over to Ms. Kaplan.
Well, as you know, I've been talking to you about the SELPA looking at taking back county programs, and almost every month different recommendations are being made, and so this may be on the agenda at least once a month because I want to keep you updated in terms of the process. So I've asked Ms. Alexander to come and kind of bring you up to date to where we are as it affects our district for the next school year.
Thank you, Ms. Alexander.
Good evening. I do want to let you know there are a couple of updates in it since it went out. I got some fresh numbers today, so I have updated it, and I will point that out as we come to those areas. Just a quick review. We're going to go through a quick review, talk about our proposed takebacks for 13-14, our proposed takebacks for 14-15, And then our proposed SELPA provider program.
Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
We have a draft report in front of us. Is that the report we're going to be looking at?
Yes.
Okay.
There are a couple of changes, and I will point those out.
Okay.
So just as a quick review, we talked last time about our district plan, and we are looking at taking back moderate-severe classes for all disabilities, as well as transition classes. As a SELPA provider program, we are considering Cortez PAU and transition program possible as a SELPA provider program, so serving other district students. For 13-14, our proposed take-back plan at this point is moderate-severe K-2, moderate-severe 7-8, moderate-severe preschool, home and hospital, which for medically fragile students, we do have our own home and hospital program, but this is specifically students served by LACO. And then transition students, all with the exception of Cortez PAU and Mount SAC students. Our district special education department infrastructure, we sort of have a few key assumptions in order to provide support for these programs as we take them back. We would need an additional program specialist, the possibility of additional clerical support, and absolutely we need training for our administrative and teaching staff, because these are students that we are not used to having on our school campuses at the present time. Our next steps, just to sort of get more into the numbers, and this first one is one where there's a change. It looks like my change didn't keep. Okay. So there are currently 13 students attending LACO classes for 13-14. We would propose to take all of those back at this time. We would need to look at opening two moderate severe K-2 classes. And we do have some students of our own that would have in the past gone to LACO programs from our pre-K classes that we would then keep and transition into this program. For moderate severe 7-8, we are looking at the possibility of two classes, and I apologize, I think my updated PowerPoint stayed on my computer, not on my flash drive. We are now looking at 15 mod severe 7-8 students, so looking at two classes for the coming year. We were presented at the SELPA meeting today with updated numbers, so I apologize for that.
Which bullet was that one? Ms. Alexander?
I'm sorry, the 7-8?
Thank you.
Yes, we would need now two classes to serve those students. Moderate severe preschool, we currently have four students attending LACO programs that would come back to us, as well as students that we are currently identifying as moderate severe, so we'd be looking at one moderate severe preschool class. And then currently there are two students in the home hospital program through LACO that we would take on instruction responsibility for. Transition, as I stated before, all with the exception of Cortez PAU, because those students would come back all together with Cortez, and then the Mount SAC program, which another district is proposing to take on as a provider program beginning in 14-15. So our students are currently at the East San Gabriel Valley Center. We have 13 students. The Orange Grove Transition Center, we have 8 students. At the Valencia Transition Center, we have 2. And at Whitcomb Transition, we have 4. So we would be proposing opening 2 classes for 13-14. And then if we decided to be a provider program in the future, that would be additional classes. We currently have 7 students attending the Mount SAC Transition Program, and we are not proposing to bring those students back. And we have 1 student in the Cortez PAU Transition Program. So our proposed take-back for 14-15 would basically be the remainder of our mod severe programs, so grades 3 through 6 and 9 through 12. Possible proposed SELPA provider programs for 13-14 would include Cortez PAU, and then the possibility of serving other district students in a transition program. And these are more closely neighboring districts that have expressed interest. Key assumptions for becoming a SELPA provider program, the need continues to exist. So, for example, if our neighboring districts no longer needed our support with transition, we might not take that on. And that program costs would be all-inclusive. So we would be wanting to provide a separate provider program that basically covered its own costs. And that's it. Any questions?
Thank you. Mr.
Spence,
any questions?
I don't know. Except can we get the updated one?
Absolutely.
The moderate severe preschool, would they use the classroom that they're that we currently house at Willowood?
Yes. As the Lakewood classes transition out, we'll be able to, and that would be more like 14-15, we'd be able to serve them at the same time, but my thought is that we would probably have at least two classes that were morning and afternoon in order to facilitate that for that first year.
At Willowood?
Yes, at Willowood.
And would they be utilizing the classroom that they're utilizing now?
Yes, because we won't have access to any additional classrooms until 14-15.
And who would be their, would there be their non-disabled peers?
We have the options program, which has actually a large population at Willowood. And we actually, I wrote into their MOU for this year that they would do dating back and forth with us, mainstreaming.
Great.
We can send our kids to them, and they can send some of their lower functioning students to us for some support. So
that's awesome.
We're working on that.
And then eventually, I know that our teachers, district teachers, preschool teachers were disappointed that they didn't get a large classroom like the classroom that the LACO had designed. It's a double classroom.
Okay.
So how is that going to be utilized, that double classroom?
What I would like to do, is it okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What I would like to do is to create sort of a preschool center. We currently have some of our services spread out. For example, at West Cove, we have our OT clinic. However, we provide most of our services in clinic to our younger students. I would like to move the clinic to Willowood and free up some space at West Cove. Also, our DIS speech class is located at West Cove. I'd like to bring it to Willowood as well. And then it would be my hope that we could run some sort of mini classes for our students who are cognitively average or above but have significant speech impediments.
And is there enough room for all of that? I mean, that would be great.
It would be in 14-15 as the LACO classes are taken back by other
okay.
districts.
So they have two classes there, the double classrooms?
Three right now.
Three? And are they all three are double classrooms?
I believe two are double and one is single. Mm-hmm. Yes. The two on one side are double. It's quite crowded there right now.
Sounds that way. The home hospital, we run our own program, but there are two of our students, I understood you to say, being served by the county. Why is that, and do they have unique needs that we haven't served in the past?
Yes, I would say they're medically fragile, so that's true. They do have unique needs. The reason that they are in those programs is that they transitioned into home hospital from a LACO classroom, and there was just no exchange of that student during that process.
So it's nothing that we haven't handled in the past, then?
No. As a home hospital program, we can handle that.
Okay. I know that we have some county classrooms now. Is that the, do we have the K-2 and 7-8?
As county classrooms?
No. We have county classrooms
mm-hmm.
on our site.
Right.
We're choosing to take back the moderate severe K through 2. Are they on our sites now or no?
They are not.
Okay.
No.
What age groups are on our sites now?
We have two classes at Edgewood Middle School, mm-hmm. and then there are the three classes at Willowood, which go from kindergarten through 6th.
Wow. I didn't realize they had that large of an age span there.
Yeah, they didn't last year. 4th was the highest. This year, now 6th is the oldest.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
The and so what was the determination on a K-2 and a 7-8?
The K-2, really, because that's where our need is within the district, and that's where we have been a bit dissatisfied with the services that are being provided through LECO. 7-8, because I think it's a good choice for 13-14. We have the space on one of our campuses. I think it's a good group to bring in without a lot of disruption to our campus.
And what campus are we looking at when you said one of our campuses?
We have current space at Walnut Grove, empty classrooms.
Okay, and then as the county transitions out, what happens to the classrooms at Edgewood?
My guess is that Edgewood will
absorb those classrooms.
Yes. Now, we'll be bringing back additional students as well, so it could be that one of our high school classes might end up at Edgewood versus West Covina, but I don't think there will be any shortage of people wanting to use the classroom.
Well, that's a good problem.
Including us, yes.
I think that was it. And then you said that another district was going to take over Mount Sac.
Walnut
has classes were going to stay at Mount Sac, correct?
Yes, that's yes. And Walnut, because of proximity,
working,
thought that would be good.
And they're working on trying to get that memorandum of understanding with Mount Sac.
I shared with them your concern. So for 14-15, that would be their goal, yes.
I appreciate you.
Of course.
Those are all the questions I have.
Thank you very much, Ms. Alexander. Thank you.
So expect this on the agenda at least once a month to keep the updates in terms of what we're working.
That's good. And Ms. Alexander, is it okay if she provides that update on the Friday update to us?
Sure.
On your Friday update? Okay, thank you. So board members, we can expect that on the Friday update. Okay, now we are moving over to item number 23, first interim report. I turn this over to Ms. Kaplan.
I'm sorry. Oh,
I'm
I have been. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Yes, this is our first interim report, and Mr. Copeland has provided this report for you, and I'd like to turn it over to you.
You received a lot of information from me in the packet. First, the big packet, the financial document, is the first interim report. Then you received the this presentation, which is try to summarize it. And I also gave you kind of more detailed, unrestricted, restricted, the changes by object, so you could see how it changed. I hope that that helped with some clarifications as the dollars went either up or down. This is the first interim report. It's required to be presented to the Board of Education, the first board meeting in December. I want to just quickly go over kind of an outline of what we're going to be talking about, the purpose of the report, go over the financial reporting sequence, some developments that have happened since the adopted budget, go over our district's general fund budget, some changes that have been made from the revised budget to first interim. Want to report out our multi-year, which is the current year plus two, and share with the board the assumptions that we used, and then finish up with a recommendation to the board on the certification of financial condition. Put all these up here. Again, the purpose of the first interim report is to show the fiscal status of the district's general fund budget and to identify revenue we've received since the adoption of the budget, to look at what expenditures have taken place from July 1st to October 31st, and to determine if there have been some major changes, do we need to change our make any course corrections to maintain the fiscal solvency of the district. Just a quick review. Put this up every time. This is the financial reporting sequence that we go through. State budget adoption in June. September, we presented the unaudited actuals. Budget revisions have taken place from September to as well as tonight, and they'll continue throughout the year. This is the first interim report. Our next kind of next thing we're going to look at is the governor's proposal for next year, which will come out in January, and what it looks like in January and how it changes. We'll keep you updated. Second interim report will be in March of next year, and then the governor's may revise. We adopt our budget, and before you know it, we're in another school year, and it repeats all over. Some budget developments since the last adopted budget. Proposition 30 did pass, and what it really did was it prevented additional cuts
of about $457 per student. So for West Covina Unified, that would have been $4.12 million. A lot of people think it passed, so now we have money. It passed, so we don't lose money. We don't lose $4.12 million. It also is set up to reduce some of the inter-year state deferrals by $2 billion, so we'll see how that happens. There was a small increase in some of the funding. I think it's important to keep to make note, West Covina, we're still funded $574 less than we were in 2007-08. So that's a cut below of $5.18 million, not to mention that unfunded COLA that we have not received in the amount of 8.31. So for this year, $13.49 million has not come to West Covina Unified. And until they start reducing that deficit, that will happen every year. I believe you probably have seen this graph before when you adopted your budget. It shows the funding levels going back to 7-8, how much we received per student, $5,793. And then 2008-09, it was reduced, took a hit in 9-10. That last line shows that if the election had failed, if Proposition 30 had failed, we would have gone from 5,162 from last year down to 4,762, or the reduction of $457 from 5,219. So a lot of people think Proposition 30 passed, school districts are fine, you have money. We just didn't lose a lot of money. We're still funded well below where we were in 2007-08. So one of the things that's still a problem is cash flow, and I wanted to address that. It still continues to impact the general fund budget. Over $14 million that we should receive this year should be paid to us. We're not going to receive that until next fiscal year, next July, August, and September. So that's $14.46 million. Improved state cash flow has enabled the state. We did get a little gift. They are buying back some of the deferrals, paying the January deferral. They're paying it in December. That will help us out to the tune of about $5 million. It's not new money. It just means we get it in December instead of having to wait till January. And in addition, they're going to eliminate the March deferral, which helps us out in our district. And so while it doesn't represent new money, it's actually a pretty good sign that maybe the economy's turning around and the state's able to start paying back these deferrals. So it's promising. Something that's, you see it in the news, it's still out there, is the possibility of this fiscal cliff, the federal sequestration. We still don't know what's going to happen. It could have an impact on our district, and what we're hearing is about an 8.2% cut to our federal programs. For us, that would be, we looked it up, $332,000. We probably wouldn't be cut that money this year. It would be cut next year, but it may be retro back to 12-13. So we don't know what it's going to look like. But it's on our radar, and I would say by our next board meeting in January, we probably will know more than we do today. So when we look at our general fund budget, there's really three parts. There's the unrestricted portion, there's the restricted portion, and then there's the combined. So in the report that you received, it's not necessarily in that order, but that's how it's broken down. Difference between unrestricted funds, those are dollars that can be spent at the direction and discretion of the board and the superintendent. Restricted funds, however, must be spent on specific programs or for a particular type of support. Federal dollars that support federal programs or state categorical dollars that are not flexible, those are all restricted funds. I'm going to break this down. Unrestricted, we'll look at unrestricted revenue first and then unrestricted expenditures, and then we'll go into the restricted. Not a big change on unrestricted revenue, and we don't really, you wouldn't expect to see it. There haven't been any major changes out there. Increased about $150,000 over the last approved budget. The revenue limit's down about $60,000, but that was just that it's transferred over to the restricted. So you'll see the restricted dollars go up and the unrestricted go down. When we look at so revenue's up a little bit. Expenditures are down $230,000. You can see in some of the salaries and benefits, materials and supplies, some of the other services and operating up about $190,000. As we move through the year, you should see the expenditures go down unless something comes up. But we plan for certain things to happen, and as the year goes on and they don't happen, we can start to reduce the budget, and you'll see expenditures go down. We look at restricted revenue. Restricted revenue has gone up $480,000. Again, there's that revenue limit decrease from the unrestricted. You see the increase on the restricted. Let me go back one. On the local, that's from the special ed, the take back, the increase in the revenue for the mental health. That's what those dollars are. On the expenditure side, when you see restricted revenue go up, you should see restricted expenditures go up. Revenue and expenditures go hand in hand. If you don't spend the money, then you lose the money. So right now we have budgeted to spend that money. So combining them together, we started the year with $20.31 million. Approved budget was 72.94. Now the revenues are at 73.57, so there's an increase. Expenditures have actually decreased. It's the way it's reported there. So our ending balance, we've improved by about $760,000 over where we were at approved budget. It's going in a good direction. When we look at that ending balance, it's not all available. There's money that is assigned in these different areas. The retiree benefit reserve, state budget reserve, which was set aside for failed elections and uncertainties beyond the 3% uncertainties. Smarter balance assessment, common core standard reserve, deferred maintenance, lottery prior year, lottery current year, and then the 3%. So that's the $14.5 million of the ending balance. It is assigned in those areas. When we look at our multi-year projection, which is part of AB 1200, we look at the current year plus two, and this kind of tells the fiscal condition of the district. It shows that we're projected to end the year at $14.57 million. That ending balance becomes next year's beginning balance. Revenues, we did not project a COLA. I'll go over the assumptions here in a minute. And so revenue is $72.72 million. The expenditures are projected at $75.52. That includes the reduction that we've been talking about in the last couple meetings, the $2.65 million. So there's an asterisk by there that we're going to reduce expenditures by $2.65 million to get to that $75.52. If we didn't get to it, then you would increase that by that number, and your ending balance would go down. Ending balance for 13-14 is $11.77 million. That becomes 14-15's beginning balance, and your ending balance in 14-15, $8.8 million. The assumptions that we used, no funded COLA this year or next year. We did project based from, in a lot of our assumptions, and come from School Services of California, and so we did build in a COLA on revenue for 14-15. We project enrollment. We've looked at it. It's pretty flat. No major growth, no major declines. So for the purpose of budgeting, we've budgeted a flat enrollment. Attendance rate has been pretty consistent at 97.87%. We did project in. We have to put in step and column. Even though we don't receive any additional funding from the state or the federal government, we still have contractual agreements where we need to increase our salaries. And so those are the amounts there. Want to point out revenue limit deficit every year. We're not receiving $13.49 million this year. It grows next year to 14.7. We put in how much we receive per ADA for lottery on the unrestricted and restricted. Put in the sequestration. We didn't budget that there's going to be a cut this year, and we didn't budget that it's going to happen next year, but it's on our radar. So if it were to happen, that could reduce, that would, if we were cut, would reduce our ending balance. CSR flexibility is scheduled to end in 13-14. However, we've been instructed by the county and School Services California to go ahead and leave that flexibility in there. For our district, it's about $2.5 million. So if it, that's how much money we receive on CSR. Health and welfare, categorical flexibility, that goes through 14-15, so we leave that in. Health and welfare premium increases, we budgeted no increases to the district's contribution. Not that, that doesn't mean there's not going to be increases on the premiums. It's just what is the district covering. Utility increases, our utility costs go up, so we did budget those. And then the ongoing budget reductions, that was that asterisk, we put in $2.65 million for 13-14 and 14-15. Certification of financial condition, there's three choices or three certifications that a district can have: a positive certification, qualified, or negative. Positive is the best, means you're able to meet your financial obligations for the current year plus two. A qualified certification means that you can meet your financial obligations this year, but you may not be able to meet it in the subsequent following 2 years. And a negative certification means it doesn't look like you're able to meet your obligations in the current year and certainly not for the following two. Based on those certifications, recommendation from staff is for the board to approve the first interim as a positive certification, and we would then submit that to the county. Before I finish, I do want to, my staff's not here, they're probably all tired, worked very hard on this last month. Director of Fiscal and the entire staff, and the other departments too. It's not just a job for Fiscal. They're talking to the other departments as we're adjusting these budgets. So I do want to thank them for their hard work on this report. And with that, I will take any questions that you may have.
No, but just to keep in mind,
yes.
So if we fall off the fiscal cliff and they make it retroactive, then in 14-15, that's another $1 million we'll be short.
Now, what we estimated was about $300,000 per year. So what I would see is for 13-14, they would take the $300,000 away, plus they would take it away back from 12-13. So you're looking at about $600,000 to $700,000 less.
Then you wouldn't look at...
And then for 14, well...
So then where we're saying we would have...
Right. If we then budgeted, if the assumptions and we were directed to say that's not going to be restored, it's ongoing, the 3 years equals $1 million. That's correct.
Wow. That pleasant note, I don't have any other questions.
Mr. Stubbs.
Thank you for clearing up unrestricted and restricted funds for me. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your presentation, Dr. Publin. And thank you for all the supportive documentation you gave us. Thank you very much. And again, thanks to your staff who you said did work with you tirelessly. Okay. Who will move this? And who will second it? Okay, it is moved by Mr. Steve Cox, and it is seconded by Ms. Cami Poulos to approve the first interim report with a positive certification. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? Okay, it carries 5-0. Okay, we are now moving on to the organizational component of our meeting. Okay, we are looking at the election of board officers for the office of president. Okay, for the office of president, I would like to go ahead and nominate Ms. Cami Poulos for that. Okay, do I get a second on that? No? Okay, it fails for a lack of second.
Ms. Poulos? I would like to nominate Jessica Shoemaker.
Okay, is there anyone who'd like to second that? Okay. So it has been moved by Ms. Cami Poulos, seconded by Ms. Shoemaker to nominate Jessica Shoemaker for president. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
I'm sorry?
Aye.
Okay, so there's two ayes. All those opposed say no.
No.
No. It fails 3-2. Okay, are there any other nominations from the floor for president?
I'll nominate Eileen Miranda Jimenez.
Okay. Is there a second to nominate? Oh, thank you. Okay, there's a motion for Mr. Mike Spence and seconded by Mr. Steve Cox to nominate Eileen Miranda Jimenez for president. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
I'm going to say no, but I want to say that I don't think it's for lack of. I think that Eileen would do a wonderful job, as she has in the past, but I feel uncomfortable with leaving people out of the rotation once again, and it looks like we're going backwards instead of forwards in building board relationships.
Thank you. Okay. It has been, motion is carried 3-2. Eileen Miranda Jimenez will be president. Thank you. And thank you for your comments, Ms. Poulos. Okay, for vice president, who would like to move?
I'll nominate Cami Poulos.
Okay. And who will second that nomination? I will second that. Okay, all those in favor of nominating Cami Poulos for, I'm sorry, it was moved by Jessica Shoemaker, seconded by Eileen Miranda Jimenez to nominate Cami Poulos for the office of vice president. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
Okay, it is carried 3-2. Okay. For the office of clerk, who would like to nominate for clerk?
I'll nominate myself.
I should have said Cox earlier. Crap.
Okay. And who would like to second that? I'll go ahead and second that. Okay, so it has been moved by Mr. Steve Cox and seconded by Eileen Miranda Jimenez to nominate Mr. Mike Spence for the office of clerk. All those in favor say aye.
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 Okay, all those opposed?
No.
Okay.
For the same reason stated before.
Okay. Okay, so we now have as our new officers, Eileen Miranda Jimenez as president, Ms. Cami Poulos as vice president, and Mr. Mike Spence as clerk. Okay, we are going to go ahead and move on to the designation of board representatives. We currently have for the City of West Covina District Joint Subcommittee, Ms. Shoemaker and Ms. Miranda Jimenez. Are there any other nominations? Anybody else would like to? I'm fine with staying there. We've not had a meeting.
I move that we leave all these the same.
I'll second that.
I have a question before. Ian Jones is not a board member, but it says to which board members have been elected or appointed. With that line in there, he doesn't seem to fit in this category. And does he need to be in a different?
The motion says is to designate board representatives.
Representatives.
So let's just insert board members or designee have been elected or appointed.
I just want to clarify my understanding. If I remember correctly from last year, you had to step off because you couldn't be a board member.
Well, the lawyer said that.
A board member couldn't be on both boards.
The lawyer said there was an issue with board members being on the charter board, if I recall.
I don't think the issue is that. Ian,
yeah.
It's just that it says a board member.
So we just change it to board members or designees have been elected or appointed.
Okay, we can change it to board member or designee. Okay. That was moved by Mr. Cox?
I did.
And then it was seconded by Mr. Cox. Okay. As amended. Thank you. Okay, so it was moved by Mr. Mike Spence, seconded by Steve Cox, to designate board representatives to board representatives and their designee to associations and organizations as listed. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, it carries 5-0. And maybe the city of West Covina will finally have a meeting. Exactly. Alrighty, we are now on to, we're on to me.
I don't know. I think we should hold off until the next.
I was going to wonder if I should change the date on it.
I think it's a waste of money to give it to her now.
Except we already did it. And
you already engraved it.
Yeah. Maybe what we'll say is we'll just add a date.
Strike through and double underline.
Put a piece of tape over it.
I would like to thank you personally and professionally for the wonderful working relationship we've been able to establish this year. I think really appreciate your leadership. I appreciate your advice and input. And I'm thrilled that you will be president again, and I look forward to working with Tammy as vice president, and I look forward to a successful year and to add another year.
Thank you so much.
On behalf of the district and the kids.
Thank you so much. Oh, this is beautiful. Oh, thank you so much, everyone. Thank you, my fellow board members. Thank you, staff. Thank you so much, Cabinet and Monica. Okay, dates to remember. Oh, any board discussion? Okay. Dates to remember, December 24th through January the 4th, 2013. It's Christmas and New Year holidays. And then January 8th is our next Board of Education meeting. There being no further business to come before the board, the regular and organizational meeting of December the 11th, 2012 is adjourned at 8:09 p.m.